Derek Overstreet here from the New Millennium Group. Listen, what I'm hearing a lot of is that folks would love to have an income plan that is specially made just for them, that provides an income stream that they cannot outlive as long as they're living. If you'd like a copy of one, give me a call at 888-999-6370. That's 888-999-6370 or utahsfinancialplanner.com. We're standing by right now.
Let's get moving with Maria. Inspiration to spend a few minutes each day to get moving on the small things that can make a big difference in your life.
Thank you for joining me today for Let's Get Moving. Today we're going to be talking about an important topic, and that is how to prevent opioid deaths in our community. My guest today is Tim Cady. He is a professional practice extension assistant professor at Utah State University and a member of the Heart Initiative. And Tim, thanks for being with me today.
I'm glad to be here.
Let's talk about the Utah Heart Initiative. First of all, kind of describe what it is and why it was necessary.
Okay, well, it's actually, HEART stands for Health Extension Advocacy Research and Teaching Initiative. That's put together by actually one of our vice presidents about 6 years ago, Dr. Ken White. He noticed that there were some issues with substance misuse and overdose, specifically with opioids. And he wanted to do something about it. He had a huge group of people that he knew he could count on, as far as all the counties have essentially offices for extension throughout the state of Utah. And he thought he could do something to help. And so he started with five of us initially. There was five people hired across the state to see what we could do to help reduce substance misuse across the state of Utah.
Let's talk for a second about substance misuse. How serious is this problem?
Actually, it is very serious. We've had one of the highest levels of overdose rates for many years in the state of Utah. A little unusual, a lot of deaths, specifically from opioids and other similar analogs to opioids. So some fentanyls and those type of things are actually manufactured. It's something we don't talk a lot about, I think, in our communities. But we do see deaths from overdose on a regular basis, and something that we're trying to work on, as well as, you know, the Department of Health and a lot of other groups are also doing what they can to bring it down to, I guess, a countywide effort also. So counties are involved in having people like us from the USU help provide information is beneficial. And what we provide is evidence-based research and information on how to reduce deaths from overdose.
So give us some tips. How can we do that?
Yeah, I guess the best tips are really talking with those when they're children, talking to people when they're children. We talk about risk protective factors for children as well as adults. Some of those are just basically communication. Showing interest in your children, for example, has a big effect on whether or not someone uses drugs and alcohol. So working on that becomes very important. Then as people get older, making sure that people realize what the other options are for some of those things they're trying to do for having fun, right? Things that they're having fun with necessarily could be things as simple as going out and playing outside. But if people don't have those opportunities and aren't given those kind of guidance as they're growing up, they're not going to have those thoughts in their head. They can go outside and play and ride their bike, and that might be fun. We have children that will do that, but we also have children who will use some things that are going to be more of a risk factor for them. Even going down to simple things such as using even vaping, for example, and starting along those lines very young. You see that happening in elementary and middle school now with students starting that. And again, it's another addiction that they're beginning. And not that there's any causal effects for some of these things, but we know that if we can keep people from doing those things to start, including using drugs and alcohol as well as smoking or doing other things, we're going to have better results as they get older with having less use of addictive substances. So it really starts when they're young and then continuing that throughout their lifetime and having people know that they're cared about and also that there's hope. We seem to find in a lot of our groups, I work with groups, for example, that specialize in reducing substance misuse. And some of the groups that we have are called harm reduction groups. Essentially, we try and talk about what they're doing currently using drugs and how we can change that and doing some other things to benefit themselves. So some things as simple as talking about getting jobs. where can they get jobs? And after they've been in jail, where are some community members who are going to hire them and give them some hope so they can make a good living and move forward after their treatment is done?
So what are some signs that parents can watch out for, or even, you know, partners can watch out for when somebody is abusing a substance?
Yeah, we think about addiction as being something that happens to a lot of people in different areas. But the reality is, if someone is doing something that's causing them harm and they can't stop, that's when we start thinking about an addiction being a possibility. So simple things like, you know, not being able to go without a drink during the day, or using a substance, or starting to use drugs that escalate. So a lot of the behaviors you see, for example, someone who's given an opioid for a broken leg, they like how it makes them feel, maybe gives them some euphoria. They continue to use it after their leg is healed. They may go shop for doctors and look for, you know, medication that way, and continue on that path. And then that path ends and they say, okay, I don't have access to that opioid any longer, but what are some things on the street that I can use that will be similar? They can buy pills, possibly from someone on the street, but they're not sure what's going to be in that pill. That's when we start thinking about overdoses occurring, people using substances right down to heroin, and even pills that contain fentanyl and causing damage. So if someone is really needing to use a substance to keep moving forward with their day, and they tell their partner, you know, I really don't feel like doing anything today, I need to stay in, and they kind of sequester themselves and don't want to be outgoing as they were probably before that, or looking to do things that are a little unusual in their behavior, like seeking drugs somewhere, or going to a park that they've never gone to before, or finding out that their friend or neighbor or family member has medication that they aren't using, and trying to get that. Most of our medications that we see, especially in our adolescents, comes from the home. Someone has used a medication, it's not disposed of appropriately after it's done for that person, and then they may use that kind of as a substance to keep themselves going, or even share with other adolescents or youth. We have school systems that we know children will go in and put medications in a bowl and take that medication, not knowing what it is, before they begin their day. Now, I was told this by people in high schools that this is happening right in Utah. Not unusual to have that happen in the school system. So if we have it starting there, remember, youth are going to want to try something risky. That's what we expect to happen. So having good adults they can speak to, parents that listen to them and communicate with them and tell them what's right and what's wrong is very important. If they don't have that, a trusted adult like a coach or a youth minister or someone along those lines can provide that care and comfort for that child or student as they grow up. And then as they become adults, we're hoping that they make choices that are beneficial to them and their families. And if they don't make those choices, start looking at what's causing that. And be honest with people, ask them what's happening. Obviously, we start looking at their eyes, you know, their faces, their skin, any marks on their arms, all those things that we think about. And we talk about even the movies that people inject, you know, drugs through. Some of that is overt. Some of it's not. We may not know that someone is using a substance unless we really sit down and talk to them and they disclose to someone that they're using a drug. We have people that misuse drugs for many years before anyone even notices that there's anything wrong. But we have those same people after, for example, I know a situation where a person used alcohol for over 25 years, worked full time, was promoted, did really well with their job, but drank at least a fifth of alcohol before they went into work every morning. And no one knew this person was an alcoholic. At least they thought no one knew they were an alcoholic. Until they began to use some other substances and cause some other issues. And then they decided it was getting too risky for them. When we started seeing people die of fentanyl, we're still seeing people die of fentanyl overdoses from pills that are being delivered to their door as youth or as adults, like a DoorDash kind of thing. It happens here in Utah. People can have a drug dealer deliver things to them. They take the pill thinking it's going to be something as simple as an opioid, and it actually contains fentanyl, and it causes an overdose, which they aren't prepared for. And then we have the whole issue of trying to manage that with people that are coming to their home and maybe looking for a party with someone and seeing an overdose occurring and not knowing what to do. And that's where we're stepping in also with what's called Narcan or Naloxone, a medication that can be used for a reversal of an overdose from opioids. And that's what we're working on with USU Extension specifically, kind of across the state, as well as educating people on what is good and what's bad for, preventing overdoses, as well as even medications we can use instead of using an opioid. What can we do instead to reduce that pain? So lots of opportunities to learn. We've got a great website that we have up with the USU Extension under the HEARTS Initiative. If people are interested, we have things for parents, we have things for adults to look at and find more information to make it a little clearer for them.
Tim, I thought I was pretty informed, but you've brought up some things that I've never heard of. Getting drugs through DoorDash, that's one that I've never heard of. Teenagers being able to possibly get, pills at school in a bowl. Those are stories that I've not heard before. And like I said, I thought I was informed.
Yeah, I think that's part of what we find quite often is when I go and talk with people that are actually in treatment, and I talk about or talk with them how they began even using their drugs. And I work with people that, may have used drugs for many, many years, 25 years or longer, sometimes very short periods, and they decide they need some help. But we have people in our communities that don't really know that drugs are illegal till they get into their teens because their family uses them so regularly. It's just what is normal in their family. And they don't think about that being a negative thing. And so, for example, that idea of having people put, medications in a bowl and select from that happens here in Utah, and then across the country it happens with people just experimenting, right? It's an experimental kind of thing that youth, of course, are more likely to try because they have that kind of gene that allows them to look for something that's unusual to try and be risky. It's just what we have kind of hardwired in us as adolescents.
It's finally time to say goodbye to the snow and hello to spring, and right now is the best time to spring into adventure in an RV from a Motorsportsland RV Center. Through this week, come check out Motorsportsland's season kickoff event and find the RV you've been dreaming of. Save thousands and even tens of thousands off MSRP and find your next adventure at a Motorsportsland RV Center today.
Let Motorsportsland help you get away.
Motorsportsland.com.
Stop paying five-star pricing for three-star service. It's time for a change. Welcome to Beehive Plumbing's Premier Experience. With our Beehive Premier plan, you have access to our VIP phone number and website to ensure prompt and reliable plumbing service by an expert five-star technician. Why Beehive? Our Premier package comes with an industry-leading warranty, giving you up to 10 years of coverage on both parts and labor. Yeah, that's right, 10-year warranty. Call Beehive Plumbing today or visit beehivepremier.com for expert experience every time.
Should you work hard for your health insurance, or should it work hard for you? At Select Health, the answer is simple. We provide clear, easy-to-understand coverage and benefits, and make access to care better and faster. After all, what's the point of having health insurance if it's too complicated to use? Seems pretty simple to us. Select Health. Insurance made simple. Learn more at selecthealth.org.
At Smith's Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Smith's Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Smith's, a world of care is in store. Visit smithsfoodanddrug.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Jeff Kaplan from KSL News Radio. You want to receive the latest news, traffic, and weather all in one place? All you have to do is subscribe to the KSL text line. Text the word NEWS to 57500 and you'll get the latest news, traffic, and weather updates. Sometimes before we get them on the air. I'll catch you on the radio weekday afternoons on KSL News Radio.
So talk about for a second the conversation that parents should be having with their children. How young should they start having this conversation? What does it look like? I mean, just saying no to drugs may not be the answer here.
Yeah, I think you're correct. We found that out, obviously, for a number of years. I think for most people, it may sound simple, but it's communicating with your child. And knowing what's developmentally appropriate for that child is important also. So you can begin talking about drugs and alcohol with children that are in elementary school. You start talking about what the risks and benefits are of certain items. And I think our parents often are afraid to talk about things because they think a child may be too young. But when a child comes home and asks you questions about, you know, drugs or alcohol, answer them in a way that's pretty simple, but provides them with information that will help them know that, you know, using drugs and alcohol can be dangerous, and that if they try something, it could be very dangerous to them and that it can harm their bodies. And so, again, there's a lot of good information available from the APA and different groups. Even the American Academy for Pediatrics has good websites to talk about developmentally appropriate information for youth, from even starting from kindergarten to third grade. So talking with them, making sure that they realize what's appropriate. Again, people forget that parents have a lot of influence over family members and over children specifically. And talking with them about what's happening and what's gone on, you know, kind of throughout their own lives can be important, and give them ideas of, hey, maybe this is something that, you know, we shouldn't be working out or trying. It can cause harm. Most people know about smoking and how bad that can be because of some of the advertisements that are done and things are done in schools, but a lot of people are afraid to talk about drugs and alcohol because they say, well, it might be too young or it might cause my child to think about using them. And that's obviously incorrect. Talking to them about it will only help them have more information and make better choices throughout their lifetime, especially as they're beginning to grow. So specifically, talking with your child, communicating well about the benefits and risks of using certain substances, and differentiating things like, you know, a medication used for someone who is injured or hurt, like an opioid used for pain when you've had surgery, is different than using, you know, an opioid or something after that. And parents being that good example are really important from the beginning.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, because addiction, alcoholism is a lifelong challenge. And you mentioned hope. What is your message to those folks that are struggling?
I think that treatment works. Something we don't talk a lot about either. Less than probably 10% of the people that have an addiction are able to seek care for that or seek treatment. And so letting people know that treatment does work. It's not easy, but I've seen hundreds of people go through treatment just here in Utah in the short time I've been here, the last 5 or 6 years. With a couple of groups that we work with, it's, you know, there are people that can help. Some of the new medications that are out there also are very, very beneficial. It's called medications for opioid use disorder. There's lots of different buprenorphine and different other medications that can be taken that will alleviate some of the pain of going through withdrawals, for example. Many of the people that we see that have significant problems have been doing it for 20 to 25 years because they're afraid of that withdrawal. You know, you're sick for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, you may not be able to function. We think about people that use drugs and have, you know, basically a heroin overdose or those types of things, they're using heroin and what happens with the overdose. But we don't think about somebody who just even tries to stop heroin on their own is going to go into a situation where they feel terrible for a period of time, and that is when they're more likely to reuse. So they're not sleeping, they're not eating, they're sick. It's a terrible feeling for, it can be up to 2 to 3 weeks or longer, depending on the physiological response. So having them know that there is help after that is important, but also saying, hey, there's some medication that might be able to help you through some of those withdrawal symptoms. So talk to your doc, get some help, go to a treatment center, and they can also direct you to get that assistance. And being in a group, I think, is really helpful for a lot of the people we work with, because it's hard to tell your family member or a loved one that, hey, I've got this addiction, if they've never been through that and they've never seen that before. Whereas a group of people saying, you know, I've been through the same thing. I have a hard time with this craving. What do we do for cravings? You know, candy help? What can help with that? What can I do that's going to help me not want that drug so badly that I'm willing to give up everything for that drug? And that's what we keep telling the people that we work with in treatment, as well as the other people that are working in treatment, that this is what we need to do. There's hope. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of good medication. There's things that can be done to help you get through this really difficult part of your life. And once you've done that, you can move forward and be, you know, as productive as you would like with your life. One of the strange things that I talk about with some of the people I work with is, what's the value of a human life now in our society? And using a bunch of different economic indicators and things, we come up with about $2 to $5 million as the cost of a human life at this point. So if you start thinking about the economic loss from drugs and alcohol and usage, it's billions and billions of dollars, correct? So we can say you have value as a human being of, you know, over even $1 million. You tell someone who's in treatment that really feel like they have no value at all, that, you know, you've got a lot of value. You're going to be able to do some great things in your life, and you're going to be able to do this, this, and this. You're going to raise our economy. You're going to help our whole communities be more successful. They begin looking at themselves a little bit differently. And we have opportunities to give them naloxone or Narcan to save someone from another overdose. The great thing about that is, if someone who uses or misuses drugs saves someone's life using Narcan, for example, they feel like they're on top of the world and they've just saved someone else's life, but they've also saved their own life in many cases because they've had such a terrible maybe upbringing. Lots of things have happened in their life. They feel like they have no value, and all of a sudden they're able to save a life. Even just training them, just like with CPR and all those things that we train people on, if you can have that power to save a life, you feel like you have more value. And if we can continue that to the people we work with in treatment, that really seems to help, at least in my experience, it helps a lot of the people we work with. Like I said, we've worked with hundreds of people in developing curriculum that we can use kind of across the state in different facilities to try and help our people that are misusing substances and help them be more successful and, you know, be the kind of person that they want to be also and be successful and do what they can to help their families and loved ones, you know, live really good lives throughout their lifetime as well.
You mentioned Narcan. Narcan can sound scary for those of us who aren't that familiar with how to use it. My first question would be, how do we know that somebody is actually having an opioid overdose when we plan to use it? Maybe talk about Narcan, how it works, and then how we would know if the person's having an opioid overdose.
Narcan is, naloxone is the actual chemical name that it's used. And it's actually, it binds the receptors in the brain that allow you to breathe. And so someone that is having an overdose has basically kind of taken an opioid, and it's going to interfere with that person's ability to breathe by sitting on receptors in the brain. And I'm basically blocking those receptors from working correctly. When you give Narcan or naloxone to someone, Narcan is a nasal spray that we use a lot in Utah. But once you've used Narcan on that patient or on that person, it knocks that opioid off of the receptor and allows that person to breathe. So in most cases, for about 99.999% of the population, there is no detrimental effects to using Narcan, even if it's not an overdose. So someone who's maybe has had a cardiac event or something, we still would recommend trying it. If you're not sure it's a cardiac event, you're not sure what the problem might be, trying Narcan is not going to harm that person. And so it may sound strange, but if someone has cold, clammy skin, they have pinpoint pupils, their respiratory rate is down to maybe even one breath per minute, that's when we start thinking about possibly being an overdose. And so we look around, see what's around that person. We talk again about being scene safe. So the scene safety of the person is important also. You don't want to harm yourself. So looking, make sure there's nothing you're going to step on or be electrocuted from, for example. Look around. And if there's not something there, try Narcan. If you have it with you, try it. Have someone call 911. Take the nasal spray. You take it basically out of a blister pack. Just peel it back. There's two in each kit that we provide and lots of other people provide across the state of Narcan. And just basically put it carefully up someone's nose to the point where you're actually holding it and just squirt it once. You just squirt it once up somebody's nose and you turn them on their side and keep talking to them. Hey, wake up, wake up, wake up. Pat them on their sides. Do a sternal rub, whatever you might need to do. Just keep them trying or make them become alert if they can. And continue to do that with a second one if you have to. Just go to the other nasal cavities, do it the other side, spray again, put them on their side again and see if they can wake up. If they don't wake up, you continue to do that, or you can even do rescue breathing or even CPR if the person's respiratory rate goes that low until someone comes from calling 911, whether it's fire, EMS, or law enforcement. And they should have more Narcan with them that they can provide or naloxone and continue that response for that person. And the other question we get asked a lot also is if somebody does provide Narcan, are they going to be prosecuted for something if something goes wrong? And there is a Good Samaritan law here in Utah and across most of the states in the U.S. that if something does happen, that person is protected because we feel that saving someone's life is more important than any harm that may come from using Narcan to revive someone.
Tim, where can people get Narcan? Where can they find more information and resources? Where's the best place for them to turn?
Yeah, there's a number of places. Obviously, you can go to our website, the Hearts Initiative website at USU Extension. And there's also the Department of Health, which can provide Narcan also. As well as some other agencies, Utah Naloxone also provides Naloxone if you're in Salt Lake specifically. And they're a great group also that do lots of really good things. So we have lots of people that can provide that. And extension offices, especially if they have a Hearts Initiative member there, can also provide that for people. And also it's available over the counter now. It's about $49 at most pharmacies and at Walmart, for example. So it is available over the counter for people to purchase if they would like to.
Any final thoughts before I let you go?
I just really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us about this. It's important for us to realize that there's a lot of really good things going on in the state of Utah. And one of those things, I think, are people being more aware of reducing drug and alcohol use across our youth that really need some help now in providing that hope for those that may need it, I think is very important. And we have that hope here. We want to continue that. So thank you again.
My guest today has been Tim Cady, a professional practice extension assistant professor at Utah State University. And thank you for joining me today for Let's Get Moving. You can find more health and fitness tips on our socials. Find us on Instagram at Moving Maria and on Facebook at Let's Get Moving with Maria. Have a great day.
With a Boost by Smith's Rewards membership, you can save up to $1,000 a year with double fuel points on everyday purchases and unlimited free delivery to help you save both time and money. And every Boost membership comes with member-exclusive offers, including free items. So add it all up, and we think you'll agree. The benefits of a Boost by Smith's Rewards membership are more than worth it. Smith's, fresh for everyone. Restrictions may apply. See site for details.